First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Women ascend the ranks of power in the city, breaking glass ceilings and promising a new vision. Good morning. We're live with you from Studio 2. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a conversation with Joyce Morgan on her new role as the county's property appraiser. Give us a call now. It's 549-2937. Then later, celebrating Mental Health Awareness Month with a special concert. And how you can get new benefits under the PACT Act if you're a veteran or you have a loved one who served. That's all ahead, but first this morning, saying she feels validated, Jacksonville City Councilmember Joyce Morgan was elected Tuesday as Duval County's property appraiser, winning a runoff against former state rep Jason Fisher by 2 points. Morgan says she will now go to work taking over for the current property appraiser, Jerry Holland. He was the only candidate for supervisor of elections and is going into that job, a job he's actually held before. But getting back to Morgan, with her win, a growing number of women hold top constitutional offices in Jacksonville. Morgan joining new mayor-elect Donna Deegan and state attorney Melissa Nelson. As women start to fill out the leadership ranks more fully in Jacksonville, City Council Member Joyce Morgan, property appraiser-elect here in studio now. Good morning.
And good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me on.
It's great to have you. Thanks for joining us and congratulations.
Thank you.
What are your questions for Joyce Morgan, everyone? Give us a call now at 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Facebook always open. So you had the narrowest victory of the night, but a win is still a win, 50% plus one. The first woman, I'm pretty sure, to ever hold this role, and certainly the first African-American woman. How's it feel?
It feels great. Duval County has spoken, and as you said, it was a very narrow margin, but a win is a win, and that means that we have to move forward, and we have to move forward intentionally. We have to move forward respectfully, and we just have to take care of the citizens of Jacksonville. And that's all that I've ever done since I've been here, and I will continue to do.
Now, you're a very familiar face and name, serving as a news anchor for decades on television. Then from there, you went to become a city council member in Arlington, also worked on the Value Adjustment Board. What attracted you to this role?
The Value Adjustment Board. So for 3 years, I served on the Value Adjustment Board. For two of those years, I was the chair of the Value Adjustment Board. And it gave me an opportunity. And I will say that serving on city council is sort of like what we do as reporters and anchors. You have to spend a lot of time reading, researching, and finding out what's going on in your city and what is impacting the people in your community. And on the Value Adjustment Board, I saw that when you see that your property is valued one way and you don't believe it should be that way, you can actually contest it. And that's what the Value Adjustment Board was set up to do, was to hear those. And so I saw that and I said, you know what? I don't think anyone is interested in this, but I'm interested. And I want to bring more attention to what goes on with the Value Adjustment Board, what goes on with the Property Appraiser's Office. And the best way to do it is run for office.
More women are running, more women are winning. Of course, yesterday we had on new mayor-elect Donna Deegan. You won countywide as a Democrat. This isn't really a partisan office per se, but what do you think the election results say about where Duval County is today?
I think Duval County came into the 21st century. This is 2023. Why should we be looking at people because of the color of their skin or their gender? This should be people who want to serve, who are willing to do the work, get the job done, and serve the citizens of Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. the time is now. It's way past time, by the way. And so I'm really excited for Donna and for myself.
Now, let's talk a little bit about how you'll execute this role. Our columnist at Jax Today, Nakisha Williams, says she feels that the fair valuation of property is a big priority for the voters out there. Property values, always something homeowners and business owners care about. Affordable housing, rent costs, a tenant's bill of rights, housing issues. Now, that's not really a big part of your portfolio as property appraiser necessarily, but these are top of mind concerns, for bread and butter issues for many people out there.
They absolutely are. And I think that that's why it's so important to have someone who's in that property appraiser's office who values fairness, transparency, those kinds of issues. Because at least if you have someone in that office who values all of those things, then you have a conversation that you can have in the community with everyone. So one of the first things that I want to do is, number one, this morning I'm going to be meeting with my future employees. Jerry Holland, current property appraiser, has invited me over. So going over to just sit down and chat, walk around, kind of get the lay of the land. And
remind me where that office is downtown.
I know Yates, in the Yates
building. It's in the Yates building, of course. That's
right. Forsyth.
Yes. Now, that's where, in fact, I was just there not too long ago for our youngest to get the driver's license. Yeah. Which actually turned out to be a little premature given our current auto insurance bills. That's another story. But let's go to some calls now. For Joyce Morgan, remember Joyce from being on TV? Well, she has gone from news anchor to city council member to Duval County property appraiser. What are your questions for Madam Property Appraiser Morgan? I guess we should call you that. You're Joyce to me, but let's go to some calls. 549-2937. Susan in Mandarin. Good morning, Susan.
Yes, I loved what Joyce Morgan just said about fairness and transparency. And she also talked about a commission that she was on where people's property values are reassessed, I guess. And I was wondering what role the property appraiser has in that process. One of the reasons that I voted for Joyce Morgan is because I have seen her through the years, and she is a woman of much integrity, and it seems like that's a very important thing in this position. And Jason Fisher did not demonstrate integrity, especially as he tied his thing with DeSantis, and the way that DeSantis is attacking Disney would have me very worried about a person in that position that would use their position to punish local businesses. And I was wondering if she'd comment about that also. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Susan. So voters that elected Deegan responded to her message of cleaning up corruption in the city. Do you feel that had coattails in your race as well?
Well, I'm sure it did. Donna and I are very much alike. And again, we believe in transparency. We believe in fairness. And, you know, any person that has a problem can take that problem straight to the Value Adjustment Board. And that's located in City Hall, by the way. That Value Adjustment Board office is located in City Hall. And so the Value Adjustment Board staff works very closely with the property appraiser's staff so that when anyone has an issue with their property taxes, they can go to them. And if they can't get it solved through the property appraiser or through the Value Adjustment Board, that's when it goes to a magistrate to help make those decisions.
So you're going to be leading an agency now with how many employees? And
just over 100.
Over 100.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a new opportunity, a new challenge. You're the CEO, basically, of a small company in some sense.
Yes, absolutely. But one of the other things that people don't know about me is during the same time that I was on television for 25 years, I was also an image director for Beauty Control Cosmetics out of Dallas, Texas. I was an image trainer, and I had under me some 88 consultants. So I've worked with a lot of people before, and it's something that I take seriously. I value people, and that's one of the things I talked about on the campaign trail is, you know, if you take care of your people, Melissa, then they have a better opportunity to take care of the citizens of Jacksonville. And at the bottom line is service to the citizens, service to the taxpayers. And that's what I do.
I didn't realize you were doing that while you were in television. That's interesting. I don't know if you remember this, but I met you in 2003 or 2004 when we were both covering a murder or some kind of breaking news. You were in sitting on the edge of Channel 4's live truck. I was across the street in Channel 12's live truck. That's where we met, covering some horrible thing. Yep. So, you know, but you had been in television for more than two decades on local airwaves. And certainly your name recognition and your relationship with folks across this community played a big role. And let's go to Andrew in Arlington. Hi, Andrew. How are you?
Very well. Congratulations, Ms. Morgan, on your victory.
Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate that.
Yes. My question is that as I drive around the city, I see very high-end apartment complexes sprouting up, you know, like trees. So with the question of affordable housing, I was wondering what your view is on that, on the fact that they all seem to be very expensive housing rather than affordable for people who can afford them. I'll take this off the air. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, as we were just discussing, it's a big problem, big issue.
It is a big issue, and it's not one that's going to be solved certainly by a property appraiser, but it is going to have to be reviewed and really looked at by city council and by the mayor. And I think the state is also looking at affordable housing with Senate Bill 102. And so, you know, that's a massive bill. I'm not going to sit here and talk about it now because it's huge. But the state is trying to make some inroads.
You're talking about the Live Local Act.
Yes, the Live Local Act.
Yeah, to provide developers with incentives to build more affordable and workforce housing in Florida. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but let me ask you, you know, you're coming off the city council. It's now going to retain its Republican majority, 14-5 Republicans to Democrats on council. How do you see this council dealing with these kinds of issues? They're not likely to support a tenant's bill of rights, rent control, which, by the way, Tallahassee wouldn't let them pass such legislation anyway. So what can council do you think, on this issue?
That's going to be a big question. But you remember that Michael Boylan was over the special committee that was looking at this. They actually came out with some really, really good suggestions. And I think because Mr. Boylan will still be serving on council, I think that's going to be something that he will lead the charge on. And especially because he worked so closely with the Northeast Florida Regional Council. And that's something they're also very, very concerned about. So I think,
I'm looking at them.
Yeah, you're looking at their office.
Their office is right across the hall, actually. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, thank you for that. Cindy in Jacksonville Beach. Hi, Cindy. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. So first of all, congratulations. I am a real estate professional on the First Coast. I'm a broker associate. And I would like to know if your office, with you leading, are going to do more about educating people about programs like portability. I find so many of my home buyers and sellers don't know anything about it. And also homestead exemption, these two benefits that people have from their property tax.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for that question. Those were the one of the three pillars that I talked about on the campaign trail a lot. The first was education, with me being a news anchor, with my degree actually being in business education. Mm. And now I'm at Jacksonville University in the Executive Master's Program of Public Policy.
Oh, nice.
I'm definitely all about education, all about training. And with the 15 exemptions that we have and the bill that I just introduced to allow us to have another exemption for builders and developers who will do affordable housing, I think that I will be out even more. And I know that, you know, Jerry and his staff were out in the community, but just because of who I am, I can see myself out even more often than they were. So I look forward to that.
549-2937. Lots of calls for Joyce Morgan this morning. Robin in Riverside. Hey, Robin. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hey, ladies. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Thank you.
I live, I came over to this side of town about seven years ago. I lived in Mandarin. Came over to help with my two granddaughters. I live in a little neighborhood that's close to the Murray Hill area. And of course, everything just keeps going up, up, up. The 7 years I've been here has been a property increase every time. Each year I've paid the shortfall, but it just is every year. I live in an 800 square foot house. And it's more expensive than living in my 1500 in Mandarin. So,
wow.
Is there ever like a cutoff, I have each year gotten the little letter attached that says, you know, if you don't pay the shortfall, then your mortgage will be this, et cetera, et cetera. If you would like to contest this or whatever, here's how you do it. Is it worth doing that in this type of a case? Because I have a very fixed income now,
well,
and it just keeps going up for this 800 square foot house. It is in an area that does have much more expensive homes. I guess that's my point. Is there ever any consideration for that?
Well, I think number one, that you should never feel that you can't contest it. It's really just the $15 fee just to get the paperwork and the filing going.
It's at your office at the Value
Adjustment Board.
And where are they located?
In City Hall.
In City Hall.
Yes,
okay.
In City Hall. So, but you can look that up on coj.net. And anytime you have an issue or question about it, you can all just always call them first just to talk to them about that. But I think that for $15, no, I would do it. I would mm-hmm. I would just try.
Yeah.
And
give
they'll
it a
help
shot.
You. They give will it. Help you. They're wonderful in the Value Adjustment Board office.
So seek them out downtown at City Hall. That's great advice. Mike in Riverside as well. Hi, Mike. Good morning from Riverside.
Hey there. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning. Just wanted to congratulate you, Ms. Morgan, on your win. Very excited to have voted for you.
Thank you.
I'm happy to see this great change in this city. I'm a relative newcomer from South Florida. I'm sure a lot of people are rolling their eyes about yet another new person here, but I'm happy to move to the
welcome.
Jacksonville
welcome.
Area.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you. And I was happy to vote for you in my first election here.
Oh, thank you.
I'm glad that you brought up SB 102. I'm a legislature gadfly, and without having to get into the gory details of it, I think that this law now signed it's really going to shape, I think, your role in this office. As a city council person, you are hearing from the residents how difficult it is to keep up with housing affordability. And so I just wonder, how are you going to be working with your staff to get out the word about all of the great ad valorem tax incentives that are in this law to help the small landlord provide affordable rent in exchange for those tax abatements?
Just like I've been talking about.
Great question.
It is a great question. And, you know, going in new, you do what you can do. But again, 8 years ago, I started town hall meetings in District 1. So over 8 years, I have done 80 town hall meetings. That's more than anybody has ever conceived of doing. And it will probably be a record that will be longstanding
in your Arlington district.
Yeah. In all districts.
In all districts.
Yes. Nobody does that.
Wow.
Nobody does that.
That must have made a difference in your victory. I can't see that it didn't.
So I intend to do the same. So how that will look in a property appraiser's office, I don't know. I'm not there. So I'm not going to say because I just don't know. But that's my goal. That's my intention.
To get information out, maintain accessibility.
Yes.
And transparency.
And transparency.
And get out and talk to the voters. So, yeah, I think people have been craving that. And on Facebook, Lisa writes, I'm so excited. It's a new day. We need more women in office. And to elect a woman to a citywide office who is also a person of color has me feeling hope for Jacksonville, she says. 549-2937, Jake on the West Side. Hi, Jake. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Congratulations, Ms. Morgan.
Thank you.
All right. I just have a question. As a property appraiser, what could you do to break up redlining?
Well, to break up redlining, first of all, redlining in its purest form does not exist anymore. In the purest form for which it started years and years ago. And so, you know, I'll be just working with our appraisers, our field appraisers, just to be sure that what we're doing is, again, fair and equitable. I think,
you know, denying mortgages to people in predominantly Black neighborhoods.
And remember,
that's redlining of your.
Right.
It still kind of exists. I mean.
Right.
Yeah. But I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
But, you know, first of all, you have to get in office to see exactly what's going on. So when you're outside of an office, you don't know exactly how things are working. So you have to get inside the office so that you can work through those processes, see what the processes are doing exactly, and not, you know, saying that it's happening, but you don't know for sure. And then ask, you know, just accessing the knowledge and working through it that way. Again, that goes back to my level of transparency that I will bring to the office and the integrity. So I will be working on that, and I am sure that callers like you will be holding me accountable to that.
Conrad,
and I appreciate it.
Conrad in Arlington. Hi, Conrad.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I was just wanting to discuss something that we discussed on here a couple of years ago. I'm in business not very far from the Old Town and Country Shopping Center, which used to have 7 grocery stores in it in my lifetime, since the shopping center was built. And when the bridge came to Arlington in 1953, there have been 7 major chain grocery stores passed through there. And when Dixie closed 10 years ago, and we discussed whether or not that was really a food desert when you were on here the last time. You seem to kind of doubt that, but we who are over in that area know that we go 2 miles in any direction to find any kind of fresh food. There was a Bilo that opened up after you and I talked. It was up in the old Winn-Dixie store at Cessory and Merrill Road for about a year and then folded back up again. So it's back to Fort Caroline Road or Atlantic Boulevard to find a quality, a full grocery store, anything beyond Dollar General and Family Dollar.
Can I make you very happy this morning?
Hey, Conrad, she's got some announcement about that. Go ahead.
Can I make you very happy this morning? Winn-Dixie is coming back. So as you see all of the work that's going on right there at the new College Park, the former Town and Country, right where Winn-Dixie used to be, Winn-Dixie will be coming back. So look for that. There's an awful lot of work going on there, and you are going to see a transformed entrance to Arlington very soon.
Yeah, I hope that that is good for you, Conrad. I hope that you are excited about that. And they've torn down a lot of the buildings in that plaza to rebuild it, haven't they?
Not torn down, but just it's renovated.
Being redone.
It's being totally redone. The parking lot has to be completely redone.
Yeah.
You know, to go with our CRA, Community Redevelopment Area specifications. But it's looking good. I mean, I'm so excited every day that I pass there and then, you know, go right down to the next corner and that new Wawa is there. It will be opening the first week.
You know, it's big time if a Wawa's going in.
So first week of June.
So, okay. So you will take office, I believe the swearing
July
in
1st.
Is July 1st. Where, by the way, a lot of people are asking, is that a public event for all the new officials? Can they join it?
And I'm glad you asked that because I will be working on that very thing today and tomorrow to center down exactly when I will be sworn in, whether or not I will be sworn in on the 22nd when the new council members, the new council president is sworn in. That's where I've seen it usually done. So I'm going to be working on that to see if it will be done then or if it will be a separate occasion.
All right. At any rate, she takes office July 1st along with many other new officers leading Jacksonville. Property appraiser-elect Joyce Morgan, thank you for being here.
And thank you, Melissa. I appreciate it. And thank you to the city of Jacksonville.
All right. And much more still ahead later. A look ahead to this weekend's Emancipation Bash downtown. We'll speak with another official, Councilmember Jacoby Pittman. But up next.
We have over 250,000 veterans living in that area, and this is the largest expansion of health care and benefits in VA history.
How local veterans can access new benefits under the PACT Act. That's next. Yeah. Well, last summer, President Biden signed into law the PACT Act, authorizing one of the largest expansions of VA health care and benefits in U.S. history. It extends and expands eligibility for benefits for certain veterans that were exposed to burn pits, Agent Orange, and other toxic substances, giving them the care and benefits they have earned and deserved, along with their survivors. For more, I spoke with Jacksonville native Terrence Hayes. He's now press secretary for the Department of Veterans Affairs. Hey, Terrence, good to be back with you again talking about the PACT Act. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you again, Melissa, for having me.
Now, of course, President Biden signed this into law last summer. It's one of the biggest expansions of benefits to veterans in American history. You have ties to Jacksonville, so you really wanted to talk to our large veteran community about this. Tell us more about the PACT Act and what veterans in North Florida need to know about it.
You said it, Melissa. This is personal for me as a Army combat veteran myself, as a Jacksonville native where, you know, my friends and family still reside and I still visit. And we have over 250,000 veterans living in that area. It's important for me to get this information out to them because it impacts them. And this is the largest expansion of health care and benefits in VA history, bar none. And it impacts Vietnam veterans. It impacts Gulf War veterans. It impacts post 9/11 veterans like myself who may have come in contact with Agent Orange, burn pits, and other toxic substances. And there's benefits readily available to those individuals and their survivors right now.
So who is eligible for benefits under the PACT Act? Any veteran going all the way back to Vietnam? Like, what are the criteria?
Yeah, veterans going all the way back to Vietnam. For example, if there's a Vietnam veteran that you know or your listeners know who is faced with hypertension, that Vietnam veteran is eligible for benefits right now. All they have to do is go to va.gov/PACT, P-A-C-T, and to apply. You'll also be able to see a whole host of other conditions there, about 23 or so conditions there. And if any veteran serving in Vietnam, serving in the Gulf War, serving in any of the post 9/11 conflicts has any of those 23 conditions, it's automatically assumed that it's because of your service.
Mm-hmm.
No longer is the burden of proof in the veteran's hands. It's automatically assumed there's benefits available to those men and women and survivors. Let's get them signed up right now.
You know, we saw comedian and activist Jon Stewart really shame Congress into moving on this kind of legislation, in particular for the veterans that were and the first responders that were harmed dealing with the site in New York after 9/11. And there are so many people that have been suffering overseas, you know, exposure to burn pits, as you mentioned, in the Middle East. Can you talk a little bit about the special health care enrollment period for post 9/11 combat veterans and what that's all about?
Yes. Again, as a post 9/11 veteran myself, to any of those individuals who departed the military and missed that 5-year window to enroll in VA health care, we opened a special window now, and that window ends October 1st. So to any post 9/11 war veteran who wants to get their health care at VA, which we encourage you to do so because our outcomes are better, we want you to sign up immediately. That window is available to you. You can find out more at va.gov/PACT, or you can visit your local VA medical center right there in Jacksonville, Florida, to get signed up and get the health care right now.
So what kind of benefits are veterans going to be able to access through the PACT Act?
Yes, we're looking at benefits ranging from health care benefits to disability compensation benefits to educational benefits for survivors. So this is critical. This could be a generational thing for many families. So again, getting this word out, getting veterans signed up, especially as we approach this August 9th timeline, to get maximum benefits in their hands is critical.
Right. So the deadline is August 10th for eligible veterans. They have until August 10th. Can they apply after that cutoff date?
Yes. Yes, they can apply any time after August 10th. Just when they sign up then, that's when the date starts for those individuals. So they can sign up a year from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. But if you're really wanting to get those backdated benefits to when President Biden signed this bill into law August 10th of last year, I am urging you, I'm highly begging you to do so immediately. And you can do so easily, free of charge, by visiting one of your local veteran service organizations like the VFW, the DAV, the American Legion. They have accredited service officers by VA, free of charge, to take care of you and guide you through that process.
So go online, folks, if you are a veteran or no one you think is eligible, and file for these benefits under the PACT Act, a new law that expands VA health care and benefits for veterans exposed to burn pits, Agent Orange, and other toxic substances. The website, as Terrence says, is at va.gov/PACT, P-A-C-T, the PACT Act. So check it out. It's the Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxics Act of 2022. Kind of a long name, Terrence, but PACT, that's all people need to remember. And it's good to hear your voice. As you mentioned, you have come a long way from growing up in Jacksonville, now press secretary for the Department of Veterans Affairs. So Terrence Hayes, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. And I hope to see you in person next time and maybe meet you in the studio when I'm down in Jacksonville.
That'd be great. Thanks again.
Well, you are invited to come downtown this weekend for a great party. It's the 3rd annual Jacksonville Emancipation Celebration. Now, the festival is a lot of fun, but it also educates the community
about the history of Florida's observed Emancipation Day, which is different than Juneteenth, which a lot of you have probably heard of. With more, we welcome Jacksonville City Council member Jacoby Pittman to Studio 2. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to see you. Also on hand, Liz McCoy, Executive Director of James Weldon Johnson Park.
Yes. Hi. Thank you so much for having us.
It's great to have you. Let's begin with you. Councilmember Pittman, emancipation was proclaimed in Florida on May 20th, 1865, right after the Civil War ended. So that's what this is all about?
That's what it's all about. We're so excited. The history of the emancipation is important. And the whole state of Florida is observing this day. And we're just excited because Jacksonville also has a little history in that. When General McCook came to Tallahassee, it was actually 2 years later than President Abraham Lincoln had declared the enslavement for slaves to be free. And of course, it did not happen. And then, of course, General McCook came and made it happen. And then we had General Quincy Gilmore come on the same day to make sure wow. that happened. And so we're excited to not only have a celebration, but to talk about the history. And our history is ugly when it comes to slavery, you know, the injustices that happen. Mm-hmm. And of course, we're still experiencing that in certain ways that we talk about as a community. So mm-hmm. we want this to be a great celebration, but inclusive of the community. It's a family-friendly event, but to educate the community between the emancipation of the state of Florida and, of course, Juneteenth.
Yeah. Now, Liz, let me ask you, this is happening at James Weldon Johnson Park, which used to be Hemming Park.
That's right.
The name of the Confederate figure was removed. The name of James Weldon Johnson was put on the park to celebrate the city's Black history. And the Confederate statue that had been in that park, the base of it was taken down, it's my understanding, just the other day.
It was taken away on Saturday. That's actually a part of a renovation that is going to happen throughout the park. But it will not inhibit the celebration that we're having.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a great, great fun time. We will have Dat's Pressure is going to be our fabulous R&B band that's going to close us out. Non-Kama, Pan-African Dance and Drum Ensemble, they're going to be performing. We will have a panel discussion mm-hmm. That will talk about the emancipation, what it meant then and now. And, of course, we've got poets. Rockman Johnson, our new council person, is also going to be hosting the event.
Right. He's hosting. He used to work here a long time ago,
way
before my time here. But, joining you on the council.
Absolutely. Well, you know, he had volunteered with us before this event. And to be able to have him as a host to celebrate, you know, 158 years of the emancipation.
Yeah.
And so we're excited about the entertainment and the lineup and what this means for Jacksonville as a part of the history.
Let me ask you both as well, this issue of monument removal is still hanging out there. Mm-hmm. Now, the monument in JWJ Park is down. There's still a big one up in Springfield. New Mayor Donna Deegan has said she's in favor of removing it. The council hasn't indicated they would move forward with it. Is this going to come up at all in the celebration this weekend? What are your thoughts about that?
I don't think so, because it's not a part of the celebration. You know, our main effort is to educate and mobilize the community to talk about how our communities have changed over the years. How do we still have a healthy conversation about issues that most people are uncomfortable talking about? And that's one of the reasons why we're having the panel, you know, to discuss the emancipation and what it means today.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the things that we're going to do is we are uniting the community with mm-hmm. this particular event. And I know that the monument discussion is kind of divisive,
mm-hmm.
but that's not what we're about. The event is really there to unite us all.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I think we saw with this recent election, a lot of people in Duval County would like to see that.
Yes.
That's
yes.
a strong sentiment, bipartisan sentiment.
It
in
is.
In this era of division and rancor, partisan rancor, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. I think we're at a good space in Jacksonville with, you know, the new city council members coming on and, you know, the redistricting. I mean, as a council, we have been dealing with a lot. And to actually celebrate our differences and to understand that we may have differences, but it doesn't mean that we can't unite and address issues that have been hurtful in our community and in the past. This is really to talk about solutions and people who have mm-hmm. been in the forefront.
And let me ask you, if I could, about the outcome of that federal redistricting lawsuit. It has been settled. The city has settled it. It had initially fought the outcome where a federal judge ordered the redrawing of the maps. That did result in some shakeups of certain districts. Your district you're in a different district yourself.
I am.
And so what about that? That has been a long and difficult and contentious process. What are your thoughts about the outcome?
It has. I think we've gotten to the point, you know, the judge has spoken. We have new council members coming in that didn't affect before this election. And so I think we move on. You know, it was unconstitutional in the very beginning. It has been like that for many, many years. And so this is a new day. We pick up where we left off. And as the new council member of District 10, I am continuing willing to work as a servant and listen to the people in the community, because what matters to them matters to me.
All right, folks. So with all of that said, come on out this Saturday to James Weldon Johnson Park in the afternoon. It's free.
It is free to attend at 4:00 and it'll go till about 9:30.
And, you know, there's so much good happening in that park. The programming,
thank
kudos
you.
To you. And it just looks like a different park these days, doesn't
thank
it?
You.
It
really
looks totally
that.
Different than it used to look.
That's great. That's great. And with more changes to come.
Oh, like what?
Oh, well, with those fountains being gone, we're going to actually have some nice grass that you can actually walk through, maybe even have a picnic on.
Really?
Yeah.
Anything else exciting up your sleeve? What else you got?
Oh, we might have some things in the works that maybe we can talk about some other time.
Maybe another time. To be continued.
To be continued.
Well, thank you both so much. Jacksonville District 10 Councilmember Jacoby Pittman,
yes.
Liz McCoy, Executive Director of James Weldon Johnson Park. Come downtown Saturday for the big bash. The
third year
for this. It begins at 4:00. And ends at 9 p.m. Music, fun, food, performances, panel discussions, and more. Have fun, folks. And thank you both ladies for being with us.
Thank you.
Okay. When we come back, another fun event we're going to tell you about, marking Mental Health Awareness Month. Don't go away.
The Jacksonville Music Experience in Winterland present Japanese psychedelic rock band Acid Mother's Temple. The experimental juggernaut performs for free on the loading docks of the Jesse Ball DuPont Nonprofit Center in downtown Jacksonville on Friday, May 26th, with local support from Madre Vaca and Majestic Mother. Show starts at 6 p.m. More information at jacksmusic.org/events.
You Ukrainians mark Vishivanka Day, a day to celebrate Ukrainian culture by putting on elaborate embroidered clothing.
It's the symbol of Ukrainian struggle, and this symbol of national clothes is very big right now.
In the midst of war, Ukrainians turn to tradition. That's next time on The World.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Robin Young. Donna Summer's daughter, Brooklyn, has made a new documentary about her mom's impact on disco and people.
Even if it was a dance song. You know, I had so many people like, I was dancing. I just broke down in tears because they felt seen.
Next time, here and now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
Who gets to build a new life in America? The rules have recently changed. It means migrants fleeing their own country face a new reality at the border, and confusion, too. Next time on 1A, we hear from those caught up in this new legal landscape and about the ongoing challenges faced by those in charge of our biggest border towns.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and you can celebrate with a concert and conversation, all coming to you from the local nonprofit Stronger Than Stigma. Founder and CEO Gabrielle Maggett is here. Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
And regular contributor and board member Catalina Selvain as well. Hey.
Hi, Melissa.
Good to see you. Okay, so this is a concert and conversation performance coming up Sunday. Oh, at a great venue, the Blue Jay Listening Room in Jacksonville Beach. How is this all going to work?
I'm super excited about it. In 2021, we pioneered this model of a concert and conversation where we pick local artists to highlight, and we sit down on the couch with them. Catalina is our moderator and conversation starter and keeper going. And we have a chance to really get to know the artists and the mental health components of their artistic expression, how it manifests and influences their art. And then, you know, what we do, basically sparking conversation and creating community, there's no better way to do that than through performance.
Now, you founded Stronger Than Stigma from your dorm room at UF, and it has since gone global in the last 10 years.
Yes, ma'am.
That's amazing. People all over the world access your virtual programming.
Yes, yes. 2020, the pandemic, we had to switch to being completely virtual, and man, oh man, did people tune in.
They should. Well, yeah, we all needed mental health support, didn't we? Okay, so Catalina, the music sounds great at this event, and also you'll be leading a great discussion.
Yeah, so the artists that that we have for this lineup are all great. We're really excited to have Pamela Elaine back. She was there for our first iteration of this event, and now we have Corey Kilgannon coming, singer-songwriter. Kenzie, who's just has this beautiful voice. She's been featured at UNF concerts before. She's just incredible. And Kale That Raps, also another great Florida-based artist. And for us, It's not just the fact that music is healing, it's that music and mental health have this really important intersection, which is why we want to sit down with all of the artists together and kind of talk about what that looks like for their creative process, you know, on good days and bad days, how they're using music to kind of get through and help their mental health and improve their mental wellness overall. And the bigger overarching cause or mission of this is that we want to get used to breaking the stigma of talking about it, and not just in a way where it's like, you know, you see it on social media. It's like, just go for a walk, you'll be fine. Take care of your mental wellness. It's like, no, we can get a little deeper than that, and we can also normalize that.
Yeah. Breaking the stigma around mental health. That's the whole point of Stronger Than Stigma.
Definitely.
Yeah. That was your goal. What inspired you to start it?
I deal with anxiety and depression, and I decided that nobody should have to feel alone or afraid the way that I did. And, you know, I think it's working. I'm really proud of the fact that we find creative ways to create community, because it's what's lacking. You know, we know that the clinical system is what it is, and there's, you know, we could go on for days about what's going on in that realm and what needs to be fixed. But something that we can do is make sure that you feel supported and not alone, and that there's a community of people around you that understand and are not going to judge you. And we've done that.
And you both, I know, feel that your generation, the millennial generation and the one right behind you, Gen Z, are leading the way in this discussion around mental health awareness and advocacy. Can you talk a little bit about that too?
Sure. I mean, we kind of have to lead the way because, you know, unfortunately, our parents and our grandparents maybe didn't have the language to, because mental health problems have always been here, you know, depression, anxiety, it's always existed.
Yes.
It's just that there wasn't always the proper language to identify and treat those. So now we have those tools, we have that language. And for, you know, for us, it's, we have to leave the world better than we found it. And so for the next generation, we want to make sure that we are those examples of talking about it and identifying and supporting each other in our mental wellness journey.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. And so this event is typical of what Stronger Than Stigma does, providing these kind of platforms.
Yes. Creating community and bringing people together. When we have our pop-up shop, the living room, this is the programming every night for 31 days. So it's the thing that we love to do. And we're really excited to have this partnership with Bold City Circuit. Dennis Negrin is an amazing human, and to partner with him has been a dream. And same with Kara at Blue Jay Listening Room. So, you know, three millennial-run businesses in Jacksonville taking on the world together. I couldn't be more thrilled.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
So, folks, come out Sunday, 5:30 p.m. to the Blue Jay Listening Room in Jacksonville Beach for this special concert and conversation with great local artists, Catalina moderating, all under the umbrella of Stronger Than Stigma. It's free, right?
Not this time around. It's a fundraising event because we do put on a lot of great free programming throughout the year. And this helps support those efforts throughout the year.
Yes. So support them with your dollars and show up. Okay.
Yes, please.
Yes. Sunday, May 21st, 5:30 p.m. at the Blue Jay. Gabrielle Maggett, founder, CEO of Stronger Than Stigma. Moderator Catalina Selvain, one of our contributors as well. Thank you both so much.
Thank you so much, Melissa, for having us.
And have fun. And thanks for listening, folks. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday roundtable after a very busy news week here in the 904. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.